Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jason Sautel, 26 years of career experience, a retired firefighter with Oakland Fire Department. Firefighting was far from Jason's mind. He dropped out of high school early and didn't really have a grasp of what was next for him. One day, he watched firefighters put out a dumpster fire, and the captain on scene asked him if he ever thought about the fire service. One thing led to another, and Jason found his way starting with Wildland, then transitioned to Oakland. The thing about life is you truly and shouldn't ever judge a book by its cover. Everybody is going through something you have no idea about. Jason's faith is his foundation, and I hope the listeners can truly tune into his story and reflect. With that, I present Jason Sautel.
My name is Jason Sautel, and I started in the fire department back in 1992, and it was with a smaller county department with CDF Fire in Riverside County, California. And I didn't get into the fire service basically on purpose. People often ask, how did you find the fire service? And the fire service actually found me. I was a young man who was a high school dropout, and I was having a lot of struggles in my life. And inside my house, I didn't find a whole lot of love. So I went out, I kind of found it on the streets. One day when I was skateboarding in an alleyway with a bunch of punk skaters in Southern California, a dumpster happened to catch on fire right next to us, go figure, right? And a fire engine showed up. And when the fire engine showed up and started putting out the fire, the guys that I was with, I didn't buy into their ideology. I didn't like them. I didn't care for them, but they accepted me. And these guys started shouting some racial slurs at the fire department. I mean, just like the most disgusting thing you could imagine. And I look over at these guys and I'm like, bro, these are the firemen. Knock it off. And the head guy that I used to skate around with, he had shaved head, wore Doc Martin boots, blue jeans. I think you guys get the picture. I never bought into their ideology whatsoever, but I looked at him and I said, bro, not cool. And he started coming up on me like he wanted to fight. And the fireman yelled at us and those guys skated off. Well, as they skated off, they said, see, we knew you were different than us. We knew, and they just kept on yelling at me. And I was like, whatever. My whole life I've been beat up, pushed around and everything. So I was like, just another fight and I'll wait for it to come. Well, at that moment, the captain walked over to me and he's like, hey, bro, you ever thought about being a firefighter? And I was like, never thought about it once in my entire life. He goes, you know what? People that stand up for what's right and what's wrong, those are the type of people we need in the fire department. Kind of paraphrase there is how he said it. And so I said, what do you need to do to become a firefighter at your department? He's all, well, you have to have a high school diploma. And I started laughing because I was a high school dropout at the time. So I actually went back. I got my GED. I started hanging out with those guys a little bit. It wasn't like a true mentorship, but, you know, I'd swing by the firehouse. They would let me skateboard there and some of their cool guys. And I really started getting interested in what I saw as the brotherhood, because like I said, I never had brotherhood or family growing up. So I passed my GED, had all that. And at fire season, they would start taking on more firefighters every year in California at CDF. So he told me to apply and I applied. And dude, I was the last they should have hired. I mean, I wasn't wearing the right stuff. Literally the world's worst interview. It was horrible. But that captain, who was very kind to me on that scene where those guys were being punks to him, he actually hired me on the spot and he brought me in, dude. And that started my career. And right there, it was almost like, even though I want to be clear, I was not a gang member. I'm not going to throw out that I was a skinhead or anything. But regardless of your color, your race, religion, or anything, when you have no love at home as a young man and someone offers it to you out there on the streets, there's a good chance you're going to take it. And it's going to be with a crowd that's like you. And I was able to step away from all of that. And I was able to join a new gang, if you will. So that was my intro into the fire service.
Okay, I love that. So you get hired. What was the department it was for?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was for CDF, which is now Cal Fire. It was California Department of Forestry. But they had a contract with the county, Riverside County Fire Department down in Southern California, which at the time had 72 firehouses, very busy fire department. I mean, when you see a lot of the wind-driven fires in Southern California, that's the area where they are. And that's where I worked. And 1993 was actually my first fire season, which is a year that Malibu burned, that they had all the big fires that we traditionally get when the weather patterns come through. So I was literally baptized by fire my first year in the department.
Okay. And so what was your experience like going through that? Was there some sort of orientation period? And then, if you can explain what that was like.
For sure. So it was a lot different back then, man. I'm telling you, because CDF and being inland, we weren't near LA. We were about 80 miles from LA and LA County Fire Departments. The big progressive fire departments, the ones that have been around for years. We were a county, smaller department. So literally we had one officer on the engine, and then you would have two seasonal firefighters. And a seasonal firefighter, we worked 9 months on, 3 months off. We'd get laid off for 3 months and come back on after that. And so the way that it went is you basically had a a 2 week academy. And bro, it was just on the job training then. You were just thrown into the mix. And I love the progression where we're at now because I mean, they had to fill the spots back then. But man, I mean, I remember going to my first structure fire and I knew nothing, absolutely nothing. So it was just truly, again, baptism by fire back then.
Okay. And when did you decide, like, I want to do this full time year round?
Well, I mean, obviously I loved being a firefighter. Greatest job. I love being able to help people, being able to give back, something I'd never been able to do my whole life. And so I knew I wanted to work for a bigger city. Just, watching shows. Back then we had magazines like Firehouse Magazine that would come through and stuff. And I knew I wanted to go to a bigger city. So I applied to San Diego City, I applied to LA City, and I applied to Oakland. Well, I always jokingly say I told all the right lies and I got hired by Oakland. And so I took the job with Oakland. And bro, you want to talk about culture shock? And I'm just not talking about with people, but going from a smaller city of about 30,000 people to now you're in a city that has a history of major events that people hear about nationwide. But from a fire department where we're fighting grass fires and a few ranchers to a place now where we have underground, underwater fires. We would have, and when I say that's the transbay tube between Oakland and San Francisco, where we actually lost some firefighters before I came on. So you had such a technical city where we had a whole downtown, which had an underground also because it was built during the gold rush. So the culture shock and the firefighting capacity that I went to, bro, it was amazingly different. But at the end of the day, the foundation was still there that I got from CDF. Obviously, Oakland put me through a 6 month academy, 18 month probation, and a lot more training too.
Okay. All right. Because I was going to ask, I would imagine that Oakland's orientation was probably not the same as a CDF.
No, I mean, you had to go through the psych background, the testing, and all everything you had to go through. Our physical agility was very tough. When I was on the list, there were 12,000 guys on the list. So it was a very competitive department to get into. And yes, the training was insane, but here's something that's going to blow people away. One thing that CDF slash Cal Fire did back then was, even though it doesn't sound very safe because of how they just started us on the job, they were huge into wear your gear, wear this, and fully encapsulate. I show up to Oakland and we didn't even get turnout pants for a drill tower. And we didn't even start wearing turnout pants until about 2005, 2006, right through there. So, I mean, we just literally fought fire in our wool pants and turnout coats and bottles. We had no hoods, anything like that. And it definitely was a trip to do that because you're going to some of these craziest fires and you don't even have a hood on. You have none of this stuff. And so it was, again, the environment was a lot different, but the training you got, plus the repetitions you got made the difference too.
Okay. And for those that aren't up to date with Oakland, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about the city? How many stations, personnel? It doesn't have to be exact, but things
No,
of that
no.
nature.
You're pushing 26 firehouses. Each firehouse has a four-person engine company, and then we have seven truck companies, and the truck companies are five-person truck companies. So a truck company is ran with one officer and four firefighters. We don't have driver operators or engineers on the trucks, it's just firefighters on the trucks. And traditionally, it's the senior man drives, and then the next senior one tillers, and you kind of work your way through that. And so in a firehouse where you'll have, an engine truck, you'll have nine guys plus a chief, you have 10 guys there. And Oakland is very, very clear on engine work and truck work is separated. When a call comes in for a truck job, say like an elevator rescue, even though there's an engine closer, the engine doesn't go, the truck goes, and vice versa. So it's trucks don't do the medicals unless the engine is out. And obviously, you got to be, go help someone out and stuff. So they separate it out. And even on fire, so like on an engine, you don't have rescue tools. On the truck, you have all the rescue tools. So yeah, it's got, I guess you'd say, I hate the word old school, but very, very old school department.
Okay. I find that intriguing because, like, to me, it's based on either history or culture. But I do like the fact that each apparatus is like job specific, whereas a lot of these other departments in the country are having to do jack of all trades, master of none type things.
Yeah, you nailed it. So a lot of times when people talk tactics, which I love talking tactics, I always have to say, well, what's your department look like? And they'll tell me, well, our first three-man engine company will get on scene, and then we're waiting like 6 to 7 minutes for our second, then a water tender shows up. And I go, okay, fire burns the same, building construction the same. We can talk about that, how fire's trying to pull the building down. But tactically wise, let's talk about Oakland. When you have at my firehouse nine guys who get on scene from the 911 dispatch within 2 to 3 minutes, and then everyone reports on scene within 4 to 5 minutes, I mean, your general thought is you're trying to get the nozzle of the front door and not lose it because everyone else is there. We get so many people there so fast that we can do things different. So what people may think we're doing is old school and crazy and culturally stupid makes sense. For example, I know in my district in West Oakland, we're the oldest district in Oakland, built in the 1800s. It's just a very old part of town, very rich in culture, vibrant. But I'm going to be honest with you, it's also a poor economy there. There's no jobs. And so when you have no jobs and things like that, culturally wise, things like to burn a little more. Shootings happen. It's a rough area full of amazing people, just so I'm clear on that. But rough things happen. Well, when we're on a fire on one of our Victorians or one of our heavy timber buildings, I have a general idea how long that building's been burning, how much is burning. And when I'm on the roof, I know I can be up there sometimes for up to 27 minutes with free burning fire. And people are like, wait, hold on, you stay up there all the time? Well, a lot of times we do, because in order to see the back of the house, you have to drive the block because our buildings are right up against each other. So we leave some guys on the roof so they can tell the chief what's going on. You can look over. If someone's in trouble, you can throw a rope down. And so we don't cut and get off. Now, guys out where I live, they'll be like, we cut and get off. And I'm like, yeah, this house I'm in right now, I would cut and get off. All right. Because you've got gusset plates, you've got engineered houses as opposed to built houses. In Oakland, it was craftsmanship built houses with 6-inch nails, heavy timber brought in from Redwood in the hills right above us. So everything is a little different, even though it's the same. So tactically speaking, we would do things that if you put on the internet, people just shake their heads and tell us that we're stupid to be doing that. But it made sense for our department and for each district, which is an individual district too.
Okay. All right. And are all firefighters EMT basics, paramedics, ALS, BLS?
Yeah, so every firefighter is an EMT, and then on every engine company, you have a paramedic. But when I started there, we were just starting the paramedic program. Our joke in California is whatever every other department is doing, Oakland will be doing about 25 years. So we were behind the game getting paramedics, but yes, it's EMT and a paramedic. And if you ever hear the stories of when the paramedics started coming on in Oakland and San Francisco, it was a rough gig, man. It was really, really rough because the old guys, they didn't want us there as the paramedics.
Okay. And do you guys handle your own transport, or is that something done by the
No,
city?
we private ambulance comes in. So the way it goes is a paramedic on every engine, because generally an engine is in the neighborhood, it gets there quicker, you know, so you can get the defibrillator, all that, to the patients right away. Then you hand it over to the private ambulance, unless it's something major and they need a hand, then you write in. But generally, more times than not, you just hand it off to the paramedics and then you get back in service.
Okay. And what is Oakland's first for a structural assignment? What is the complement on the first alarm?
Yeah, well, let me just be clear, because they have changed lately. A lot of stuff has changed and stuff. And since I haven't been there since, you know, a couple of years back and stuff, I'm just going to give you what we had during my time, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So we, starting off, we would send two engines in a truck to every fire. Then the RIT thing came along right as I was coming in. So we would send two working engines plus a RIT engine to a fire and a truck. And so that was it. So the cool thing about that is, you got work. When you pulled up on scene of fire, it was work. Now, if you were downtown and we knew it was a high rise, you'd get a high rise response, which would, you know, be the six engines, two trucks, two chiefs. But when I was there, we just didn't have any chiefs. We had three battalion chiefs on duty and one operations chief. That was it. So when we called for a second alarm, we'd have the second chief come along. Well, then we only had one battalion chief in the city. So we would always try to have to do as much work as we could without calling in too many folks, because we had to stay available for the city, because the department used to be a department that had engines and trucks and then, you know, like 30 something firehouses, and we'd been reduced all the way down to 25 firehouses.
Okay. And so, what was your first assignment and what was it like? I mean, 'cause you obviously stated earlier it was a culture shock, but what was it like for you, like upon walking through the doors of where you were assigned?
Bro, it was crazy, because like down in the county department where I was, everyone was like, "Hey, how are you? Shake your hand, you know, get to know you," because it was small. The way that I explain Oakland is we're like a tribe with a bunch of different teepees and our own individual thing. And every time, every firehouse had its own thing. So I walk in my first day after the drill tower was four engine two truck, which is known as Jurassic Park, the oldest guys in the city. I mean, you're talking about, these guys were legends in the fire service that you'd never heard, like Buckhorn and all these guys. And you come on, these dudes, they started in the 60s. There was even a guy who started in the 50s. So you're like, bro, you're
Wow.
doing the math. You're like, okay, we're in the 90s now. You've been on the job 40 years. You know, I mean, these guys have gone through where they just wore their uniforms to structure fires to where we are now. It was crazy. So they had the old school mentality where it was, you're nothing, shut up, just learn. We'll tell you when you're allowed to talk type of department. It was the type of department where if you actually worked out, it was frowned upon as a new kid, because there was something else you should be doing in the firehouse. Sharpening the tools, cleaning, doing this. Your hands were dirty all day, a rag in your pocket. Your written drills that you had to do in your studying, the only time you would do those was after dinner, and you better be doing them on the tailboard of the fire engine or fire truck. You did not do them at the table. You had to really prove that you were a blue-collared worker, because these dudes, people frown upon it, but these guys, that's the way they were trained up. They were blue-collared old guys, and I respected the system. And you know how it was. The senior man run the show. You would go and talk to the most junior guy, steer clear of the officers. But we had a captain and a lieutenant at that firehouse. It was a three-story firehouse with poles in it. And it's just, you're walking into, like, to me, I loved it, because I was walking into tradition. You would read the logbooks and you could go all the way back to the 1800s to see fires these guys had and stuff. So walking into that level of tradition of the leather, you know, we wore leather helmets and we didn't have a standard, you know. I wore a 1974 New Yorker. And you concentrated, are concentrated, what we concentrated on, excuse me, was serving the citizens. It wasn't all the fluff. It was drilling. The drills made sense, bro. You'd go out the door and you would drill in the neighborhood, learn the neighborhood. You would learn each block. You learn the addresses. You actually had to study the cards to learn your first due stuff. So the culture was tough, but there was a point where it was almost a little too tough at times, because you know how it is. Some of those 4 or 5 year guys, they would think they were one of those 40 year guys. And those were the ones, respectfully said, I wouldn't do it. You wanted to punch in the face sometimes.
Okay. Do you see, now this is just a personal opinion for it's a question, but your opinion on this. Do you see anything wrong with departments keeping certain traditions in today's times with today's newer generation of firefighters?
Well, I'm gonna go really theological on you and historically. You know what? I love living in America, but I hate some of the things that we've had to come through. But I praise God that I live here and I'm in a place where we can overcome stuff if we all work together. So yes, there are traditions. They had to go away, dude. And I don't want to put a black eye on the Oakland Fire Department, but just think some of the old things that used to happen in the firehouses of the boys club and everything. That needed to go away, you know, because we need to make sure we were mentally and physically fit when we're on scene, if that makes sense. And I'm as far as I'm going to go on that. So I'm glad that some of those things changed. I'm sad that we've lost some of the culture, dude. I really am truly la sad. Now, a culture that does not accept a person for who they are, what they believe, colors, anything. I want none of that. And what was a blessing was my first full-time assignment house I put in for was in West Oakland. And I was the only white dude on the crew. And I got to learn some stuff from my captain. My captain came on the job in the 60s, bro. And as an African American male who was born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama, he taught me, and it was a Vietnam veteran, bro. He taught me so much. Like when he walked into the firehouse his first day, first thing that was told him was, boy, don't steal anything. I just, even in my, I can't even comprehend that, you know, even if I feel like I'm an old school fireman. So that stuff needed to go away. The toughness that they would be on the women needed to go away. We like, you know, we had a bathroom and you would turn the sign on this, it would say women or men and stuff. Well, guess what? Each one of those women, they earned the right to be there. And I'm very clear on this. I am old school in this. You earn the right to be a firefighter. And if you do not earn the right in any way after fair evaluations, there's other jobs for you, you know, but this isn't the one for you. So I'm sad that some of that sometimes has gone away a little bit, but I see all sides of the story too. You know, I understand the department does need to look like the city that it serves. And in our department, a lot of the young men don't have the same opportunity, or in our city, the young men don't have the same opportunities that maybe my kids have in the suburbs. So we need to give a little push, open up our firehouses and teach these young dudes how to do the interview right and get this in there. So I believe in opening up to maybe guys that wouldn't apply, but you see a can like that's the guy we want. Those are the changes I've seen that need to be done right. But just to say, oh, we need to fill a quota, bro, I'm not down with that ever. You are in the right. You are in the right. But I do believe we have to give some help to those to help them earn the right too that haven't been given the same things that, you know, others have.
No, for sure. For sure. Okay. And how important would you say mentorship is for any new individual coming in the fire service today?
Bro, I'm gonna break this down. You know, I'm not here to talk about faith, but as a man of faith, the Bible makes it very clear we call it discipleship in the church, that when a new believer comes in, it's my job to help them grow based on the experiences I have, the lessons I've learned, the wisdom that I've been given by the Lord Himself, along with the elders in my church, the people that are here on earth. Well, the fire department and the local church have a lot in common. When a new firefighter comes out of the drill tower, our number one priority is to turn them into us, if you think about it. I'm not going to change who they are. I'm not going to change our gifts and abilities, but we're going to mold those gifts and abilities that they've been given, and we're going to turn them into us who are firefighters and mold them and shape them. And the only way that can happen is through mentorship. It comes from passing on the things you've learned. And this is something I'm so passionate about is teach from your victories. That's cool, but teach from your losses, man. You got to teach from your losses. What didn't work? If we just sit around and talk about everything that works, bro, that's pride in us patting ourselves on the back. But if I go to someone, I say, you know, man, I almost got killed at the hydrant one time. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, it is so stupid. We wrapped the hydrant and engine turned the corner. I got in front and I wasn't even looking around to keep my head on the swivel. And I saw the hose come up. Well, what happened was the coupling snagged on the engine on the bed. It was coming out. And all of a sudden it pulled so tight. Think how much pressure you need for a hose to snap. Well, when it snapped, it wrapped around me. I got kind of started dragging me down the street. Bro, it's yanking my pants off all this. And the next new truck company's blowing the horn, telling the first new engine to stop because stupid Jason's trapped up in the lead, you know? Now I was embarrassed, bro. It was a humiliating. Of course, we made fun of it. And as a senior guy at the time, but you need to teach from those stories. So now by mentorship, I go, listen, kid. In the drill tower, they say, wait till there's two couplings on the ground until you start working on the hydrant, which is an Oakland thing. But they've never told you why, really. I want to give you a personal experience where it almost killed me. And I'm going to go one up now. I can get a hydrant hooked up within seconds, dude. And you know, my area of town, you got to make sure that you sweep out and get the drugs out of it and the drug dealer's money out of it so you don't send it to the pump and everything. But I can knock out a hydrant pretty darn quick. So there's no reason to put yourself in harm's way for something that only takes a few seconds. That's mentorship, dude. People think mentorship is we need to sit around with binders and sit around and teach them the whole specifics of the fire department. No, give me your wisdom, bro. You were blessed with some amazing wisdom from going to all the fires you've been to. Pour it into the new guys. Call it what you want. Mentorship, this, training, growth. But I encourage you guys, just share your knowledge, man. Pass it on. It's imperative because you're the only one who has it. You're the only one who experienced the fire the way you did. We can both go to the same fire, but if you look at a report, sometimes it looks like a completely different fire. Give your wisdom to these guys, man. It's so important. And don't be pompous and arrogant and not give it, or the culture of that I came through, just shut up and do it again. You know, it's like, bro, I want to hear what fires were like back in the 60s and 70s. I want to hear those stories. So it's mentorship is the highest of the high things because, like I say, I parallel it over to discipleship and it's mandatory.
Now, I came up in that era. I don't want to say the exact era, but I came up under that mindset of, as a new person, you listen, you speak when spoken to, don't ask too many questions. And so, like, what I did was I accepted that, right? But a problem I see now in the fire service is, especially when it comes to firefighters who then turn to company officers, if you had a company officer that had that mentality, most of the time, or it's like 50-50, really, you might. If I get promoted and I had that mindset growing up, that's the same kind of mindset I'm going to produce to the next firefighter. And that just kind of repeats that vicious cycle. So
100%.
I'm 100% on board with you. Like, there's a time and a place to ask questions. You never ask your officer a question on the scene of an actual incident. Wait till afterwards. But we still have firefighters that still think that way.
Do 100%. So let me go over my first fire. So the joke in Oakland is out of the drill tower, you're guaranteed to catch a fire within your first couple of shifts. It's just what it is because we put our firefighters in the busiest houses. And again, I'm not trying to prop it up like we're just the fire gods of the United States. But if you look at our volume, it's there, bro. It does match what we're going with there. Well, my first fire, no joke, was a double fatality fire in a four-story apartment building built in the early 1930s, wooden center halls. I mean, just. You know, you don't want to see anything burn, but when it does, it's kind of cool and it's technical because you really get a good fire, bro. And I was so lost in that fire. I remember I thought I was going to die because I was trapped. Well, I was trapped between the toilet and the bathtub in a room about, you know, five rooms down from where the real fire is burning, things like that, you know, and things that I had questions about. And then once the fire was out and I wasn't even on nozzle, I'm pulling, so everything was just going so fast around me. You know, your first few fires are so fast. It's like you hear the NFL, a new quarterback, everything's so fast in their third year, everything starts slowing down so they can see the game. Well, that was in the fire department. When we came back from that fire, dude, first off, I was tripping because I'm a young man, you know, just out of my teens, and I'm doing overhaul next to two dead bodies. And I'm looking at these burnt bodies, going, what the heck? You know, pulling silly guys are have cigarettes in their mouth, they're joking, you know. And I mean, I'm gagging and coughing because once your bottle runs out, you just take it off. I mean, obviously, if you're an IDLH environment that won't let you in there, you got it on. It's not like that. But dude, we had no overhaul mask, no bottles that we would wear, anything like that. And you're coughing and gagging and stuff. And these guys are just chuckling it up and joking and stuff, which was kind of cool to see that. But the part that sucked was we get back to the firehouses. And all these, I always call them my gentle giants, these guys that trained me up, they just hop back in bed. They went to bed. I'm like, bro, we were just at a 3-alarm fire with dead people next to me. You're in bed? I, at that time, realized I don't want that. But my thing that I learned from that was I want to teach a new kid culture of like, listen, bro, don't ask too many questions. We're going to give you what you need to know in bits and pieces. So don't go too fast. Well, if no one knows that, how are they going to know not what to ask or not to ask and stuff? Tell them, come to me. I'm the most junior guy in this group. Come to me for everything. Are we clear on that? Okay. Ask me a bazillion questions. Okay. Because it's going to be me and you. Don't do it at the dinner table. Don't do it around the, do it in the tool room. And it is my job, even as the newest member on a department, to tell the next person what the culture is so they don't make a mistake. But number two, that culture, sometimes the new guys, like you said, they take it and they have no, they don't know what to do with it. They didn't truly absorb it and learn it. So therefore, if I know I'm not going to know your name for the first 6 months on the job, guess what? There's a reason for that, but I'm pouring so much into you because we have a tradition of how we're going to train you up. But the new guy is going to also clue you in on this is how these guys do it. And if you follow what they're doing, bro, you're going to be the best fireman in the city, you know? But like you said, you get these guys who they just buy into that mentality without understanding what it really does. They become an officer and we've all worked for them. And it's not good, dude. It's not good at all. It's not good for us or the citizens.
No, that's a fact. Okay. In your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you? Because I've never been to Oakland, but I call myself a fire nerd. I follow lots of different departments, lots of videos on YouTube, and Oakland definitely has their fair share of fires. But 2025, we like to coin terms that define firefighting, so aggressiveness, what does that mean to
Me,
you?
aggressiveness starts off, it just can't be one simple thing. It starts off with being able to, well, first off, let's go what our job is. Our job is to show up. That's it. I tell guys, show up. That is it. When a new kid would ask me, hey, what are we going to? A fire. That's all you need to know. Because I want you to be trained up, equipped, best equipment, best training, everything that we need to be aggressive once we get there and see what we've got. So to me, aggressive starts at aggressively training, aggressively getting that mindset to be the best firefighter, aggressively doing what it takes to make the job about the citizens, not about us. Now, I am one of those guys where, yes, I care about your safety. I really do. But I want you so trained up that I feel so good with your safety that we can aggressively do what it takes to get that fire out. So aggression to me at the simplest form would be whatever it takes to get that water on that fire as quickly and effectively as we can. As quickly and effectively. Now, people say, what about the safety part? I'm not going to talk about that because safety is already paramount. What we do is inherently not safe. I see things changing. People will talk about being like Oakland's aggressive. Well, when someone's in a trapped in a house during my generation, we went in and got them. When in Oakland, and I'm not saying to be rude, but a dog house, not saying that we are citizens or dogs, but a dog house is occupied. Every building in Oakland is occupied. A shed is occupied. Everything gets searched. Now, guys will push back. Again, dude, I know what I'm looking. If a building is crumbling apart and falling and it's a bonfire, after I've walked and I've tried to make injury and I've made the decision, yo, this thing's falling down on our heads. I'm not done. Everyone in there is truly dead. There is still that in the fire service. But even if there's a smallest little space we can get into and bounce out as soon as it starts to light up, that's aggressive, is get into those spaces. We would just hop in. We didn't call it vent or search. It was called, hey, throw a ladder and search the second floor. It would be get as close to the fire as you could get and work your way back from it. Make sure you know the layout. People say, hey, you taught the classes on bailouts. How'd you learn that? I said, the fire taught me that, dude. Well, how'd you learn to hang on to the ladder when you came out the window? Well, because I didn't want to fall 30 feet. Okay, you learn these things as of now. I'm glad there's training with as of. But dude, the aggressiveness that we need has to put our safety aside, but our safety is handled with the training and knowledge that we have when we get there. Bro, I'm not an idiot. I've been in fires where it would have made me jump out the window if I was on the 50th floor of a building. It's that hot. When it gets that hot, it's going to push you out. It's not like you're just standing there, okay, let me burn to death. And those th situations, it seems like they act, a lot of administrations act like we're walking into something that's going to kill us right away. So be very careful where it's like, Dude, no, our job is to go get those people out, get those family members out. So aggressiveness to me is getting in there, getting water on the fire as quick as we can, because we all know fires are burning hotter and faster. So we need to get water there much quicker to make it better. And I'm a guy where I say, yeah, we'll split up. So last thing I'm gonna say on the aggressive part is I'll see scenarios and they'll throw them out. Okay, you're a single engine, you pull up, there's someone hanging out of a window, there's fire here, this, what would you do? Well, bro, I'm not really there, but let me take a look. There's a lot of scenarios because I know my guys. I might we have my engineer pull a ladder by himself and go for the grab while we're going in to hit the fire. I may look and go, oh, guess what? I can see the bedroom doors closed behind that person just by the level of smoke coming out of them. I'm gonna hurry up and get my guys inside to get water. And I might take two here and send one interior alone. People, one interior alone? Bro, I've been interior alone many a time, making the push as guys are coming in behind me. So aggression is do what it takes to get the fire out as quickly and effectively as possible. Because once that fire goes out, things get a lot better really fast. But I will never back away from life, property, environment. Life, property, environment. That little triangle that we're always taught way back when. Life is always the highest thing. Whatever it takes to save that life, if it is make the grab right away or hit the fire right away. I've been on both sides of the thing where if I truly went for the grab right away, the person would have died. Because tactically, we need to get some water on that fire real quick. They were in an okay spot, you know. But if we wasted our time climbing the ladder, knowing the fire is already climbing up the stairs and getting ready to get up there, bro, we need to get some water on that fire. They're hanging out, they have fresh air around them. We're going to get them. Don't worry. Would we ever let someone die that we could rescue? No, it never happened. Would we ever let them get hurt or the injury get worse? No. But aggressively speaking, you have to just be fast, be trained, and do what the scene calls for. Don't show up expecting what you're going to do. Show up trained, ready to do the unexpected.
Okay. You mentioned earlier about window initiated search, VEIS, whatever you want to call it, back when you were on Oakland. So obviously, that just goes to show, at least to me, the things that we're seeing now in the fire service, it's not new. It has always happened, whether it was coined this way or termed or whatever the phrase was. It's not anything that's, we're not reinventing anything. It's already been there from the start.
I'm in total agreement, dude. You know, the fire department's no more special than any other place when it comes to history, right? History always repeats itself. We always see what a war start over. Well, at the end of the day, probably money. It's the very, very bottom root of it where war starts. You know, different challenges that we have in society. They've always been there, dude. Nothing's changed. It's just that how we handle them may be a little different, how we can look back in the past and do that. So in the fire service, nothing has changed. I was at a class not too long ago, and I'm not gonna lie. I'm one of those guys. I never went to classes outside the department. Hear me out on this. I'm not one of those guys that was against them, but I was in the gym. We had so much knowledge in-house. I'm gonna be honest with you that I'm not gonna go spend a couple thousand of my dollars to fly to FDIC, do all this other stuff when we're pulling a hose on a daily basis. And we have guys who are learning differently. Hey, what's this triple fold thing? What's this? What's that? And we try, like, nope, not doing that. Let's go back to our static lines, you know, things like that. We wouldn't do that. But I was in a class not too long ago as a keynote speaker. And dude, I was literally getting angry because this guy was talking about policies, not what they did as firefighters, but about after you enter a room, you couldn't cross a hallway as you're doing a search. And I'm like, dude, I mean, I literally wanted to stop, everyone, stop, say that again. No, bro. I know what the fire's doing. I read the smoke inside and read the heat inside as well as I do outside. I know how far I can go. So if I'm upstairs, I'm not going to pull a ladder, go to the next one, have a guy wait there. A lot of times we're doing the search. You don't have that dude with you. You're just doing it, but everyone knows where you are because you work so well together that, yo, Jason's up on the second floor doing a search. Well, when someone else frees themselves up, they're going to come to me. If I call that I have a grab, they're going to come help me and stuff. But dude, it was just crushing my soul to hear all these things that had to be put in place first, which was slowing the operation down. I would have to, dude, I would have to climb over 10 broken cars and push three pit bulls out of the way to try to get to that other side of the house, just not to cross a hallway so I could carry the ladder over there. We only use wooden ladders in Oakland. They're not very light, dude. They're not very, it's not hose, it's not flexible. And it was so policy driven, it crushed me. Bro, I want to be so clear to anyone hearing this, I'm not one of those anti-policy guys. I think policies are great. I think they're great to have in your binder of things to work with, but not fully stay under the whole time, you know? And that was rough, dude, is seeing that. So people are still trapped. We're still going in and getting them. I don't know. Like I said, well, would you use a ladder or use this? I've used the exterior stairwell many times. I've used the interior stairwell many times. I don't know what the building is, but all I know is I want to get above the fire as quick as I can and to the backside of that fire as quick as I can to look for anyone's trap. Dude, that's it. What it takes, I really don't know. And it's something they've been doing long before you and I came into the fire service.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the thing about policies and procedures, like you, I agree, they are needed. They are needed for the benefit of the organization, for the members to know. But the only issue I have is policies are in black and white, but the fire ground is sometimes in the gray. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, my policy says this, that, and the other, but most policies don't have like subtitles or subchapters because every fire scene is going to be different. You're going to be faced with a different scenario. There's a lot of decision making that has to be done very fast. And I think most chiefs understand that, but the ones who are straight policy book driven, they're the reasons why I think now the fire service is coming back to it was, hey, we are the priority. Victims, unfortunately, you're second. But I think there's been a huge shake and a new regime that's like, no, this we are here for the citizens. Like, I signed up knowing that this job is dangerous. I signed up knowing that I could get hurt. But with the amount of proper training and education, hopefully that lessens my chance of getting hurt. But also, at the end of the day, in the back of my mind, when it's your time, it's your time.
You nailed it, bro. You nailed it. So let's hit that real quick. As an officer, because I promoted to lieutenant, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But as an officer, say like we're going to some guys that are trapped as a window washer, which I've been to up on the 30th floor. And we see that it's getting ready to fall. And if we don't go quick, these dudes are gonna die because the bay wind is coming in, all the fog's blowing in, it's getting rough. Well, you as my firefighter, if you decide, hey, I'm just gonna go over the edge and scale the wall and go get to these guys because they're gonna die before you tie a rope around me, bro. I'm stopping you. Not because you're getting tied up. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do it fast. We're gonna do it effect. We may not have all the 100% the second line on you and everything, but I'm not just gonna let you fall off the building. Same thing with a fire. We need to have our officers smart enough to know that there are times I have grabbed you. Settle down, slow down here a little bit, okay, dude? We're going in with a line. There's other times where, dude, I'm flaking line even into a one-story house and it's uncharged because I know what the fire is doing. I'm just like, I'm experienced enough to get the hose line in there and I can pull it back. If the fire starts rolling me, bro, I can crawl out. I've been fighting fire in wool pants my whole career and no hood and stuff. I get lower to the ground, I can get out. But if the conditions don't let me flake that hose in, I'm not flaking it in. I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get water on that fire the quickest. I'll see articles written, from officers saying, don't ever do this. My thing is, don't ever say, don't ever. Don't say that whatsoever. Because there's many times where I've done this, but it was based on my skill and knowledge level. It should be say, only do this if you're competent enough to do this. That's what should be said. Only do this if the conditions allow you to do this. People don't realize how fires work and how long a human body can actually survive in a burning building that looks really bad. We've had grabs. We've done some things where people said you were stupid for doing that and stuff. If you looked at the tactics on it, no, it's what we had to do to rescue that person and save them because they were viable. We had to change up our tactics to get to them, and we had to quote use that word you used earlier, be a little more aggressive than we'd normally be if they weren't trapped in there.
Okay. And do you know today is Oakland still currently operating with that mindset, engine, truck, where you're going to search everything the fire department deems it clear? You know what I mean?
100. What I love about Oakland, even to these days, is we put a lot on our officers. Meaning, check this out. This is going to be totally against what everyone's ever heard, but just listen to me on this, okay? From my time frame. A chief ordered me one time to get my guys bottled up on the roof because we go to the roof without bottles. I mean, we didn't take bottles up to the roof, to certain roofs. When we have a 12-pitch Victorian that we had to throw a 40-foot on, plus extend a 20 on, plus get a scaler up on, my biggest concern is not having my bros fall off that freaking building. Dude, when you're truly cutting toe holes, which they don't touch anymore, a little triangle, get your foot in there, and a guy is holding your axe belt as you're trying to cut a hole and stuff. I don't want that extra leverage of a bottle on me. Now they'll say, "That's stupid. You're giving your guys cancer." Shut up, is what I say back. I know my district. In Oakland, we always have an onshore breeze from the famous fog you see come through San Francisco. Well, it burns off by the time it gets to us, so the wind is always blowing that way. If you have the wind at your back, the fire is blowing that way. You're cutting this way, it's venting, it's going out that way. So, me as an officer, I tell that chief, pound sand, I'm not going by your policy on this. But hear me out. If I'm on a flat roof, commercial building at 3 in the morning, and dudes ain't got their bottles on their backs ready to go, I'm sending them off that freaking roof. You know what I mean, dude? And again, please, please, please follow whatever your department says. I don't want you to go off what I'm saying. I'm just giving an example of falling back on the knowledge of the officers. I've got the safety of my guys. If you think I'm here to kill these four guys, you've lost your dang mind. I'm not. I'm gonna do what it takes. But I'm gonna, properly said, firefighters are just tools in the officer's box, if you really think about it. And I'm gonna use my tools to the best of the ability to get this thing out and stuff. And one of those things that we need to do, again, you'll hear me keep saying, is that's why I would stay trained up and keep my guys trained up all the time. Is so when we got to these instances, I could justify to them why we were doing what we were doing. And then they would go back and go, "Dude, that made a lot of sense. I like that." You know, so policies, bro, yeah, black and white, you got to be cautious with that kind of stuff. I'm not against them, but I sometimes think they limit your knowledge gathering, your knowledge sharing, and all the other stuff.
Okay, I love it. When it comes to leadership, whether it's company officer, chief officer, what does leadership look like to you? And what does leadership mean?
Well, again, you can see I'm long-winded on stuff because I go back to my theological level on it. I believe that there's this thing called righteously, meaning you were given a gift and ability that's not of your own. It's given to you. And I also believe that when those abilities are given to you, you need to recognize them and use them in a way that is going to help other people. So a righteous leader recognizes that I have these leadership abilities. Stay humble, don't get prideful, but recognize you're a leader. And as a leader, you need to now start honing those leadership skills. And I believe the biggest leadership skill that you need is to learn people and culture. Hear me out on this. When I went into West Oakland, just three doors down from where the Black Panther Party started, in a culture I knew nothing about. And again, just to be clear to everyone, never a skinhead, never the ideology, but as a skater, surfer in SoCal, that was the gang I ran with. Okay, now I have to learn some culture. And when I learned the culture, I started understanding why things are the way they are. I don't fully agree with the way maybe it's being handled at times, but I'm like, wow, this is where it's coming from. Now let's take that down into a firehouse level. I learn the new kid, which we call a new probie in Oakland. They're just new kids. Hey, new kid. And stuff. I started learning a new kid's background. Where are you from? What you doing? What's your experience level? Oh, you went to Cal? You're the third running back at Cal? Okay, I've got a physical dude now who I know that if he's a college football player, he can take orders. He's also very brilliant because to play college ball, he got to be a smart mofo, dude. Okay, start working with that. Then I talked to another guy. Where'd you come from? Okay, and I hear his, and you learn your crew's backgrounds. That's where it starts right there because now I understand your mindset. Okay. Now I have to shape you in to be in the, and when the firefighters hear this, be clear, I'm not calling you guys tools because even an officer is a tool. Okay. Meaning we're part of the equipment on that fire engine that puts the fire out and stuff. We're just the biggest piece of equipment and smartest piece of equipment. But now I need to shape you so I can use you. And the way I've always done that, I say the best way to put together a truck in an engine company as a leader is don't look at people's strength. Strengths shine through. You know, you see a guy that can bench 300 pounds, you can already see it. You know, what you want to do is find each person's weakness. My personal weakness, ropes and knots. Bro, I struggle tying a granny knot, but I'm on a truck company. So I want a guy in my crew that's so dialed in on rescues class that one jokingly said, one of those dorks that goes around to take all those classes. I need that dork with me. I need him with me. then I know that my good skills are maybe cutting holes and doing searches. That's something that just comes easy to me, you know? So we need to build companies based off of each guy's weakness, and they get someone strong next to them where they have some weak skills, because not everyone's gonna be perfect at everything. Some guys are gonna be better at other things, you know? And so as a leader, recognizing what people are good at and what they're not good at, get them effective at all levels, but know where their strengths are, and man, tap into those strengths and put them with people that don't have those strengths. If a good leader can recognize that, they're a good leader, in my opinion, man, because it starts off with leading the people. Who do you want to go into battle with? Some guy that's, you know, doesn't get to know you or anything, somebody that's not kind and caring and compassionate? Or do you want to go into battle as someone that truly gets to know you because you can tell they care for you? I'm going with the guy that cares for me, dude.
Good. Okay. At what point in your career did you decide? Because you mentioned Oakland doesn't have any like engineer positions. You're just the senior man drives.
Well, on the engine, we have engineer position, but that's the engine. So I'm sorry to all clarify that.
Oh,
We have the
okay.
engineers on the engines, but again, that's a very specific task. They don't go interior. They generally don't wear any turnouts whatsoever. They're mobile outside the fire, that kind of stuff. So sorry, we do have engineers, but on the ladder companies, no. So on an engine, engineer, officer, two firefighters. On the ladder company, four, because we have all tillers in Oakland, just because of small streets, we have to have tillers. So you have four firefighters and one officer. Sorry, I need to clarify that.
Okay. At what point in your career did you start you decided like, hey, like I'm ready to move up into that position, whether it was driving or just being the senior man.
Yeah, so I was the senior man. I knew I never wanted to be an engineer because that position scared me. When someone say, you know, an engineer, hey, can you drive? Oh, yeah, I can drive all day, all night. Like I filled out mortgage papers going to a second alarm fire one time and didn't get in a wreck. I can drive. Now ask me if I can pump. That's a whole different story. Bro, I didn't go the engineer route because that to me is the most important position on the fire ground. Dude, the two most important positions are the nozzleman and that engineer. My honest opinion, people can push back on me, but if you have a dialed in nozzleman, well-trained, aggressive guy who knows how to push it as far as he can, bro, we can stop fires from going to second and third alarms with him and an engineer who can get him the proper amount of water. I'm telling you. But my fear was I'd crush me if I couldn't get the guy's water inside, you know, and I was responsible, or I couldn't get the hydrant. I didn't want to have to think through all that technical stuff. And those group of guys, man, they're amazing. That's why I believe engineers, a lot of times, that's a life position when you get in that position, because that's such a dialed in skill and that you need. So why did I decide to go up? I'll be honest with you, dude. I was classic, like, I don't think I ever want to be an officer. I'm not sure. But my classmates, hey, dude, let's take the test type of thing. You know, I knew I was qualified to do it. I knew I was fine to do it, but I just took the test, dude, to be honest. And then once I made the test, I'm like, oh, wow, I actually did okay on this. Let's put in a little effort to get to the next level and stuff. And I knew once I got on that list, I wanted to be the best officer that I could be. I really did, man, because my officers sat me down early on and had a talk with me. And it was Tony Credelli, an old captain. He said, "New kid, you're gonna be an officer in this fire department one day." And right when I went to say, "Oh no, sir," like we're supposed to say, "Shut up and don't give me that line of BS. I'm just shut up and listen to me. You're gonna be an officer one day." And he gave me everything that an officer needs to do, and it was about knowing your crew. And I just knew that I wanted to do that. So it was like once I got on the list, then I knew I really wanted to be an officer. I just took the test to take the test, to be honest with you, bro. That's why I did it. You know, I'm 10 years in, it's just what we do.
So you waited 10 years. Do you see any issues with guys and gals who promote within year two, three, four at the company officer? And
Yes
just
and no.
your personal opinion.
Yes and no. I look at certain guys and I'm like, don't listen to the BS of these guys telling you to get 10 years of experience before you go in, because I can see this is a leader. I can see it in him. He's going to learn more on 10 fires than the other person may learn on 500 fires, just because of the gifts and abilities. They recognize it and they're absorbing it. They're a true born. I'll tell them, don't listen to all this nonsense. Then there's other people. Yo, dude, wait, sit back a little. You need to get some experience. I met 21-year-olds who are wiser than me. I've met 40-year-olds that are stupider than I was when I was 21 years old. So it's a yes and a no. It should be, you look within yourself. Don't promote to try to get ahead of people. Don't promote because you want that seniority. Don't promote because you want to control the day and as an officer, you can do it. Don't do that. Do it because you've been given that gift and ability. Guess what? You might have been given the gift and ability to stay the senior man, to stay the senior firefighter. Dude, don't step outside of that. Otherwise, you're doing harm to you and the department. You know, no, it's a true search yourself and stay humble because it may be hard to see. Like, I've got my best, not best friend, really good friend. He's the chief of the department and he was our probie. He's the chief of the department. I was like, dang, I should have hung out and been a chief, you know, so, but check it out, dude. I could chief a fire. Not a problem. Seriously, I could chief a fire out. Could I do the daily duties of a chief? Nah, I'm not interested. I keep city councils. I can't go in front of city council because I'll get us defunded, you know? So.
No, I like the answer. I really do because you, I've you know I've been doing this podcast thing for a little over 2.5 years now, and it is amazing to hear when I ask like why you decided to promote. I might need to go back and tally it, but I'm pretty sure over 50% the reason is because I didn't want to work for this individual. And I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but then too, what I've been doing here lately is if I run into or I happen to have a conversation with somebody I know who's promoted to company officer and I give them a little bit and I'll kind of go, hey, how's life? And then, they'll explain it's good or whatever. And then I'm like, how's being a company officer? And then they'll explain and they'll tell me, and then I'll ask the next question is, do you regret it? And it's an astounding number of I wish I would have stayed in my position before I decided to promote. And it's always, that's why, like, for me, I don't really have aspirations to be captain. And then when I say that, the people I hang around with will be like, well, you're either shortchanging yourself or, okay, like, if that's how you feel, then that's fine. But it's like a flip side of the coin. So, like, right now, I'm in our lieutenant's process. I'm on the list. And our lieutenant where I work at, you are a relief company officer. Your duties, you're pretty much an engineer, but they reclassified it because when your captain's off, you slide over and you ride the seat. I feel like I can do that part-time, like a substitute teacher. My love is driving though. And granted, I'm on a truck company. I've been on an engine. I was on an engine for 16 years, but when I decided to go the truck route or the ladder company, there's an art to throwing ladders. I love the freedom of like on a ladder company, to me, you get to do a little bit more. You're not handcuffed to a nozzle all the time. You gotta throw ladders, search, forcible entry. So there's a little bit more autonomy and I kind of like that responsibility. But I just love how you mentioned it depends, but then again, too, when I talk to people that it's like, I wish I would have stayed in whatever position I'm in, it just makes me. And then you mentioned too the day-to-day of paperwork and meeting, like that's not me. I don't like that.
No, I hear you. And I'll give you a little pushback on both of us here on your statement and my statement. I think we got to take the me out of it, of like me not wanting to do certain things. What if by me sacrificing myself to get that paperwork freaking done, do the stuff I don't like because I know I have something to offer to these guys as an
Right.
officer? Well, then I need to step up and do that. Best officer I ever worked for, you know, he's even in my book is Cappy. Man, I wish I could have written more about him because, bro, think of a Denzel Washington, but a guy who absorbed the fire service for 40 years, dude, and a guy who's been through adversity through growing up in the South as a black man who couldn't ride certain parts of the bus or drink out of something, who went to the Vietnam War, who landed into Oakland, and just that background coming with him of a man who should be angry and hateful, but changed all that to make a guy like me and our crew better. He's my dad, dude, and that's the guy I wanted. I even kind of choke up a little thinking about him. I call him Cappy, but his name's Dougie, dude. He broke it down to me one day when I was on the list because he was one, he's advocating, like, no, you're going to be an officer in this department. He's also one who advocated the day I gave my badge back and he understood why. He said, here's the job as an officer. Your job is you have to fill out every part of the job from probationary all the way up to your level and do everything. But you get some extra pay, kid. And when you tuck the men in bed at night and they're all in bed, and after you're done cleaning, washing, fighting fire, loading hose along those guys, that's when you get your officer's pay. You turn on your lamp and you spend a couple hours doing that work that would have kept you away from your crew. That's a good officer right there. And it just hit me, dude. Like, and he never said it, but that was it. In our firehouse, this is what we were taught, and our officer do. You would go to the officer's room and we clean our officers' quarters and their bathrooms. Your officer tells you no. Well, guess what? We would always teach new kid, oh, don't take that order from your officer. You don't say, I'm no, disobeying that. And he's like, coming, I ordered you not to, direct order. Bro, he's gonna scare you. Keep cleaning his bathroom. If he comes up and tries to physically move you up, give a little pushback on him. Trust me, he'll pull off what the officer would be doing. Like my captain, he was testing to see how much you cared for him. That I was disregarding a direct order that meant nothing. It was just a game to do that and stuff. Well, I could beat Dougie up. So I got to clean his toilet and stuff. But if he could beat me up, guess what? He's cleaning his toilet for the day. But that was what we would teach guys is love that other dude. The officers would teach that pour this. This is what love looks like in the firehouse and stuff. Care for the other guy, do more for him than you do for yourself. And that's to me what an officer should look like. Now, a good officer would also realize if I see a new kid come to my quarters and I say, yo, I clean my own room. And he goes, okay. And he turns and walks away. I'm not going to hammer him because that's embarrassing and stuff because I just gave an order. But I'm going to go to the senior man and say, hey, dude, check this out. This is what happened. Kind of. So then he can go and clear it up and says, hey, next time Lieutenant Sautel says, don't clean his bathroom, freaking get in there and you push back on it. You know, because I just want to see if that kid would just walk away from the work, which he did. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to humiliate him or make him feel horrible or anything because I ordered him away and he followed my order. But I just want, you know, it's I just want to see if the culture was getting in on him. And I think good officers recognize that kind of stuff, you know. And if I find someone who would come to our firehouse and they had that personality, well, the beautiful thing about Oakland is we got to pick and choose who we wanted to work in our firehouses. We'd vote you in. Even as a captain, you would have to come and eat dinner with us, hang out with us, and we'd have a vote right in front of you, a thumbs up or a thumbs down if you got to put in. Seniority ruled, but tradition was you didn't put in unless the crew invited you.
Okay. Traditions seems to be a lost thing, you know, in certain areas of the United States when it comes to fire departments.
Well, tradition's done right, because I'll be honest. And again, not talking down, but there's a couple firehouses that prided themselves on being all men, 100% all men. So the thumbs down would be before the female even walked into the firehouse. That
Right.
tradition counts in. But the tradition that said we got to choose who we want because we were picking a captain who would come in and be the captain that would fit with us. We were getting the engineer who'd be the perfect fit for this house because we knew who fit in here and they knew they fit in, so they want to put in. That way we could give thumbs down to the people who wouldn't fit. But to use that tradition to exclude people from fitting in, nah, that's where you got to be cautious with traditions.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. The wellness side of the fire service, mental health, you know, it's a push that's being more and more brought to light. More and more discussions, lectures, conferences are taking place because I'm sure you will agree, feelings was something that when I was growing up into the volunteer service and then, you know, went to the career side, you never really talked about your feelings. You never talked about the calls that bothered you. It was either, this is the job, kid, and take it, leave it. If you don't, maybe this isn't the job for you. But we're seeing a trend now of like, hey, it's okay to talk about things. Hopefully you can have the advice I give people. Hopefully you have at least one person that's in your line of work that you could talk to because let's face it, at least in my opinion, your spouse isn't always gonna get the job. You know, like firemen, we're kind of morbid, you know what I mean? But it's just the way we cope mechanisms, whatever the case may be. But how important is the mental health side?
Bro, you're in my wheelhouse now. Let's go. I don't teach tactics because the tactics I teach would get people fired nowadays. You know, I just don't. And there's so many young guys out there and girls that are teaching that stuff. Go get it. And I love it. And I'd love to advise them. But I've slid to the other side, dude, a side where I see a need. And the need is exactly that, in mental health. Here's one of the biggest issues I see in the fire service, which you just hit on. And I explain it in front of thousands of people yearly through books or even just one-on-one with people. Is as firefighters, we're trained from day one to be stone cold lifesavers. What does that look like? Now I'm going to flip it over. Let's look at a stone cold killer, a true killer. What is their job? Their job, they meticulously do what it takes to make the kill. That's it. Their whole vision in life is to hide, to do this, to examine, and then make that kill, and then do it again, and do it again to fuel that desire in them. Okay, let's turn back over to firefighter because we're not killers. We are stone cold lifesavers. We're trained to do that same thing, but to save lives. So what does that make us? Makes us where we can become the greatest liars on the face of the earth because we have to lie. How are you today? Fantastic. That person that's dying in front of you, they don't care if you're having a bad day. So you have to tell them you're having a good day. That person doesn't care. You know, if I'm sitting there with a 98-year-old guy who's dying, their family doesn't care if an hour earlier I was with a one-year-old who just died. They don't care about that. So we have to become liars and it becomes part of who we are. And it can become dangerous because it shouldn't become who we are. It's just a skill we use. So I had that skill. And my life took such a drastic turn and so many bad things happened. When I wrote my book, I haven't put in there about how I was just seconds out from killing myself, but a San Francisco fireman saved my life. And no one knew that. Even Cappy, all these guys that work with me. Why? Bro, because I was the best damn stone cold lifesaver there ever was. And you weren't going to see it. But I had no one I could talk to either because no one, it wasn't the norm to talk about your feelings or anything like that. So it is so important now. And this is what I'm an advocate on. It's not an I and a look at me, but we have cool jobs. And if you've had some really cool things happen to you, use that as the end of like telling a story like, yeah, hey, Jake says I was on a fire one time. I was bringing a lady down a ladder. She didn't want to let go. So I was, instead of it being the hero trying to bring her down, I'm yelling at her, lady, I'm going to throw you down if you don't get down. You know, the opening line of telling a funny story and then saying, those are the fun parts of the job that I love talking about. But you know what, dude, make sure you have a place where you can dump the bad parts of the job because every scene that we go to, we leave the best part of us there. Whether it's hitting that fire aggressively, giving the best medical care we can, we leave the best part of us there. But we also pick up the worst part of that scene also. Sometimes it's a heavy rock. More times than not, it's a pebble. 99% of the times, it's not going to bother you. Why do some get to you and others don't? I've seen people talk, oh, well, because you recognize them and she looked like your wife. Oh, no, that Hispanic little boy didn't look like my wife. I don't know why that call affected me more. It just, some bother you. Why? I don't know. So I leave that aside. All I care about is that it bothered you. And so we need to be able to have places for our stone cold lifesavers to be humans in the firehouse and to talk. Because, like you said, talking to people outside the fire service, they haven't been in that foxhole with us. They don't get it. I also want to hit something that you said there about our spouses. I'm just going to use wives and stuff because every guy I work with, but wives. One of the biggest lies told in the fire service is your wife or your spouse can't handle what you do and you need to protect them from it. Freaking biggest lie on the face of the earth. And I'm going to go biblical here. You were given a wife. That's your one now. That is your one. Now, do we need to go home and say, so we went on a call and Kirill got hit by a car and explain all brains and all that and just explain the scene? No, no. But if you walk home and you go, honey, I went to a call where a kid died last night. She knows. The picture's been painted. She reads my emotions because she's my one. She knows me. I poured into her. I don't need to give her the scene. Now she is someone who can help me work that. Not the same way you can, because I could call you across country. Bro, check this out. So while we were on that scene, though, one of these medics is, I'm so pissed off. You know what I mean? I go to you for that. Or, hey, bro, have you ever had this time where you're just driving home and you're thinking about a reason to fight with your wife? I go to you for that, right? But if I don't bring my spouse into it and I keep this brotherhood, which is a brotherhood's a great thing, but it can also become a very dangerous thing too, if that's all we lean on, dude. We need to have that there. So guys to talk to, and where I'm going to finish on that part is tell your stories. And that's why I'm an advocate on that. Why I wrote my story. And, you know, after, I mean, dude, I get hundreds of phone calls a week and people wanting to talk and everything. And what they say to me isn't a pat on my back. It's they see themselves in my story. And that's why I wrote it. I didn't want, even as an author, you're writing about you. And it sucks because as a fire department, you don't want to make it about you, but you have to. So I wrote it in a way everyone who read it could see themselves in that story. They see themselves as the main character, even though the main character isn't a character, it was my life. Those are all true stories in there. And it opened up some of the toughest guys you could imagine. It gives them a place where they can now feel comfortable. They can start telling their story too and help other people.
I really hate when this happens. I had a really good question, and
Probably.
I was listening to you so intently and just like drifted away.
Bro, so here we go. So I do podcasting too, and sometimes I get so locked into them. I'm the same way. I'll actually let them start interviewing me and stuff. But no, we're like I said, dude, just with the telling your story, it's so important, dude. We don't need to counsel one another. Sometimes best counseling you give is just be there and listening to someone, you know? And we need to make ourselves real. The other thing I'll throw out just to go with that as you're coming up with the question there is think about this, dude. When someone is hurting so bad, like I was, that I was ready to take my own life and my crew didn't even know about it. If I did, they all would have gone back. Oh, we should have known. We should have seen the signs. They're going to second guess everything. I take that away from people. I said, check this out. If I wanted to do it, there's no one going to stop me, whether you saw the signs or not. But what my crew didn't do, and I'm not shaming them for it, was they didn't make themselves available to that level for me. There wasn't anything made available. So if you make yourself available to people, because I'm also a true believer that the person who's struggling, they need to reach out too. We all have to do a little bit of work because we may not see it. The big changes, yeah, you're going to notice them. The thing, hey, bro, you okay? You know, looking for the pattern, that's there. But if we made ourselves available, and we made sure to let everyone know we're available. And someone does take a path they shouldn't have taken and ended it. You shouldn't feel any guilt, dude, because you were there for them. But the problem being is departments and even individual fire companies, they haven't made that available. So I'm not trying to say feel guilty, but use it as a way to start making it where people can come to you when they're struggling, you know, just be that open door for them.
No, I agree. I agree. And you know, another key piece of advice I give to individuals is the fire service. I kind of compare it at times the fire service to high school. Telephone, tell a friend, tell a fireman, tell a fax, whatever, telegram. Like you, at least for me, when it comes to like true personal matters, you can't tell everybody. Like you have to have that one person you can divulge some things to and know like it won't go beyond them. Because I see on the flip side why firemen don't want to open up, because you know, as soon as they get done telling somebody, that person tells the next, and then the story gets construed like you wouldn't believe, and
Bro, it'll
then
even come out of admin, seriously. And you're like, what the fr-? I had a personal issue come from admin. I'm like, are you guys kidding? I mean, I could have sued over it, but again, I was just like, I hear you, dude. It's like, are you kidding me? Come on now. Yeah, so you're right. So I actually wrote something about this yesterday, talking about the hierarchy, because you know, just nationwide with what's going on and everyone so locked in on the stories that are national, as opposed to remember, there's a lot of stuff going on in people's personal lives. I can sit around and talk about an assassination that disgusts me and have a talk with people and have different views, and I'm not gonna walk away mad or hating the person, but those conversations are being had. But yesterday I realized, hey, brothers, we need to check in on one another. Have you been checking in on your ones? So to go off of that, you talk about who we should talk to 100%. So I ranked it for me, God and Jesus, they're my number one. Christy, my wife, is my number two. My local church, just for me, is my number three. Then my number four is my guys. And I put an asterisk on the bottom. And again, I preach at church and I'm a very faithful man and follower of Christ. But I said in the italics on the bottom, who are your guys? Just so everyone knew. And I said, texts that you would send that you'd never send your pastor. Those guys, those are your guys. If you send them texts that you'd never say, those are your guys, the safety spot, the things where I can send something that even my crew would laugh at that would probably get me fired nowadays, you know, because it was, that was racial or it was, oh, you know, it's like, no, it was a joke. You know, those are your ones. And again, I'm not trying to say anything bad, but that's trust right there. If you can tell good jokes with people, those are your ones, and those are the ones who you confide in. But cautious about pouring to other people because it's not cool, you know?
For sure. And so you Well, you told me like off air, you had an injury that ultimately you came back, but it ultimately sidelined you from the fire service. So my question I like to ask you is, we all know those individuals who give every single piece of sweat, blood, tears to the fire service, but that's all they know. And they think that without them, the fire service doesn't move on, which this is it's sad to say, but this is facts to me. Like, we are all a cog in a machine. Like, when we put our paperwork for retirement, 35 years, 40 years, 40 plus years of service, that's all good and dandy. But the next day, best believe, they're gonna have somebody in your spot, like replacing you just like that.
Totally.
With how much you love the service, and I don't want to say it was taken away because everybody has a chapter. Like, we want to finish out our chapters in a way that we believe is right, but sometimes what's written from above is written. So with what you experience, what advice can you give to members who that's their ideology? Like, I'm going to rise up through the ranks. I'm going to do this, that to make the department better, whatever. But what happened when that's cut short?
Bro, the day the doctor walked into my hospital room and said, "You're never going to be a fireman again," at that moment was the worst day of my life. Hear me out. I dropped out of high school. I went back on my GED. I had no college training. 3 days after my 18th birthday, I became a firefighter. I'd never taken a class outside of it. It's all I did. It's all I provided for my family with was, it's who I was. I was Jason the fireman. Not that I broadcast outward, but internally, that's who I was. I idolized it, dude. It was my idol, man. It's gonna feed my family. It's gonna do this. And all I could think of was, how am I gonna continue on? I have no identity anymore. I have no paycheck. How's this? I can work overtime when I need a vacation or something. Let's be real. Now I'm gonna be cut to this, man. And it sucks so bad. Now, a few years later, looking back on it, probably one of the greatest days of my life. Do I miss it, bro? I miss it so bad. It's kind of like being a football player. Once that helmet comes off, it never goes back on. Dude, I'm not gonna lie. When a fire engine goes by, I get a little choked up. So I'm like, you lucky bastard. Excuse my language. You know, you lucky bastard. You know, you get to go to that job. You know, I miss it. I really do. But bro, I was so blessed to have the time I was, and that was my time. God gave me that time. That was my time. I've tried to play God before. I don't make a very good God, dude. I'm gonna be very clear. If I could become anything I wanted to be or do whatever I want to do, which is one of the biggest lies told. Trust me, that's okay to chase it, but there's also a thing called it's his will. And if it's not his will, you're not going to give it. But if I could do whatever I want to do, bro, I would be on the Lakers right now with an NBA contract. Okay. That debunks that theory right there. Jason doesn't have a contract. I'm not hanging out with Shaq. You know, I'm not chilling with those guys. I have to go the route that God wants me on. Does he give me a lot of options? Totally. But sometimes he closes doors, man. You know, and even though you pry it, you get a power tool and even breach the wall next to it, what's on the other side isn't there anymore, dude. And you got to move on. And so you got to sit there and look at what you were blessed with during the time. And for anyone listening to this that's still in the firehouse, you were so blessed to be there. You're so blessed to be grouchy today. You're blessed to be happy today. You're blessed to be where you are because you are serving. You have a purpose. You're giving back to your fellow humans, and that's such a beautiful thing. But one day you're not going to be doing it at a capacity. And so what broke me was I thought I couldn't help anymore. Bro, I actually get to help the fire service now more than I ever thought. You think a guy who doesn't know the difference between a verb and a noun would ever think he'd write a book? Think I'd write a book sitting in a firehouse? No, bro, I wouldn't be writing that book if I was in the firehouse. But I'm in such a blessed way to give back now in different ways. It's a total blessing, dude. So your career is not going to go your way. It might go your way. I'm not going to take either one for you, but just understand you are not in charge. You're in charge of what you're given. Okay, when you're given, you're in charge of it. It can be taken away from you. And when it's taken away from you, which, as we know, everything in this life does come to an end. On this world, everything's coming to an end, including our jobs one day and the people we love and everything. You realize you're not in control and your priorities change up. And you start thinking, well, while I'm here, I'm going to fill out the duties, not because the box is said to check it, because I've been blessed with this opportunity. And I really want to take advantage of this time and be the best version of me that I can be and stuff. And I think that's the perspective I have now since my injury and I had to step away, but it took a little while.
Yeah, I'm sure that wasn't instant, but like you said, looking back at it now, the fact that you get to sleep in your own bed, you get to attend most family activities because, you know, we unfortunately we have to work. At least for me, I know that what I signed up for, if I can try to be there, I'll be there. But there are going to be days where I can't get that trade, I can't get anyone to pick up that shift, and so I'm going to miss certain milestones, but you don't have to worry about that now. Everything is kind of at your leisure.
Right. And I joke too, because my wife knows, because I was like, I also don't have an excuse anymore. Because it'd be like, when our kids, they had like, the fifth grade play. Help me out. I didn't really want to go to that one. I'm like, oh, I couldn't get the trade, babe. And she's like, you're a liar. Because any guy would trade for a guy to go do something with his kids and stuff. So I have to be there now, bro. So it's the exact opposite. I don't have that excuse. Oh, no, mandatory. She's like, you're not mandatory. You pick that overtime up. I can go to your telestaff now that they have the computers and stuff. But yes, dude, you are correct there. I'm missing things and all that. Being there blesses me. But again, being with my family, that's a me thing. If I'm with them, I've been blessed with that time to pour back into them and be the dad that God wants me to be. Just like if I'm at the firehouse, guess what? My lowest priority is my family when I'm at the firehouse. They're the highest priority in my heart, just so we're clear on that. But the dude sitting next to me, the person outside the doors of the firehouse, they're my ones at that point, and I'm blessed to be in that position. Then when I'm home, I'm blessed in the position that my heart is still for everyone in the firehouse. But right now, it's my family I'm pouring into, and I'm going to pour into them. Or when I come back to a convention or I do a podcast, I'm pouring in there. So it does open up opportunities for you. And there is life outside the fire department. We always hear that. But even if you have 30 years and you retire, there's a struggle there, dude, because guys, well, I'm going to fish. I love fishing, but not enough to do it every day. I love hunting, but not enough to do it every day. I think as firefighters, it's in our DNA to give back and help. And the day that comes to an end, it can be a very dangerous day. I don't believe in retirement. I just moving on, believe in moving on and serving in different ways. You're a young in shape dude. You're serving in ways I can't serve right now. But check this out. I'm serving in ways you can't serve right now, but we're still serving,
Right. And I really love how you put that because I've never really thought of it that way. Because, like, your family should be your priority. But when you're at work, they become less of a priority because the people that are on that truck with you, that's your priority at the time. And I love it. I've never heard it explained that way. And I'm not saying, like, you know, if your wife calls you, you have like 5 missed calls, you shouldn't answer. You should, because obviously there's something going on. But it's that mindset. Like for me, when I go to work, I flip that switch and it's like, all right, I'm all in. I'm here. They're paying me to be here. I should be all in. So I love how you put that.
Yeah, it's more like think about this. I live because of Bay Area. People look at Bay Area fire departments, what they pay. Bro, you still got to drive 100 miles in at minimum to afford housing in California nowadays, And so for me, I live 90 miles away from the city, because there is I could afford in Oakland, man. No, I'm not doing it, bro. The tax dollars just don't give back. And as far as I'll say on that, but my kid's 80 miles away and he scrapes his knee. Am I there to physically take care of him? No. But in my heart, I'm hurting that he's hurting. I give him a call and check on him. But a dude next to me scrapes his knee. Guess what? I'm there with him. That's my priority, dude. Your priority's in front of you. People always like to list their priorities. I say BS, your priorities are in front of us. My priority is staying available in the firehouse to get out the door as quickly as we can to get to the next emergency. And that emergency is my priority. The fire on the other side of town, not my problem. The other stuff, I'm keeping an ear on it, making sure the brothers are okay. That's not my priority. What's going on in another firehouse? I don't give two rips about the gossip over there because they're not my priority. These guys are my priority right here, man. These are the guys I care about. So your priority is right in front of you, but who you care for in levels is in your heart. Because I'll tell you what, dude, I love you as a brother in Christ, as a brother in the fire service, but I love my wife more than you a little in a different way. You know what I
Right,
mean? And so,
right.
and so you got to keep that. So that's why I truly believe we keep stuff tucked in our heart, but your actions will always show your priorities, and if you're showing that your crew's number one, they're number one. When you're home, you show them they're number one through your actions.
Okay. When you were in Oakland, did you still live that far away?
Yeah, I lived out here because, like I say, dude, a house in the Barrie is well over $1 million, and that's in not a very nice area. And so even when you're making over well over $100,000 a year, it doesn't go the way it does. We worked a 52-hour work week and stuff when I was there. They're now doing the 48 96s and they get some more time off, but it's still on a 52-hour work week, so it's a weird schedule that they get time off. But they get 10-day stints off every few weeks, which is kind of nice, so they don't have to come in for their 2 days off to keep that 52-hour work week alive. But we would do one on, two off, but every few shifts we went one on, five off is how it went there. So every day we went to work, it was a Friday, but we did trade. So I would usually trade up. So I would, have my 5 days off in blocks. I'd come in, knock out a couple, two, three shifts, and be off five in a row. Yeah.
All right. So, and I won't go down like this hole too big, but with Oakland now, as busy as they are, they do 48-96s and operate just fine.
I can't speak into that because I wasn't there for it. All I gotta say is I couldn't just, I don't want to open up a Pandora's box here, but since COVID, the things that have been poured onto the fire service and the amount of work that they have to do now, the stupid, sorry, I'm throwing out the stupid senseless work that has nothing to do with the job. I don't think I could handle it as much now. I'm not talking about the medicals. I'm not like in Oakland, we don't do code twos. We go code three or we don't go. End of story. If it's how it rolls. We don't do all that stuff. We're saved for emergency work, praising God for that. And we're saved. Like if we have a third alarm fire in the city, we don't go to medicals anymore because we have to be available for fires and stuff, type of thing. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm just saying that's how we operate. But dude, just the little simple policies and the work that the classes that you got to do just to stay certified as a firefighter nowadays, these stupid classes are it's ridiculous. And now I have the stress of I have to get this done and get that done. There's not a day 48 hours. I need to work 96 hours just get the amount of work done that you want me to get done. I don't think that's fair for the guys. So I think a 48.96 with that sucks. I'll be honest with you. Now, if it was 48.96 operating where we just went on medicals and fires and then we went to the drill tower to do company drills and stuff, yeah, dude, I'm all out. But to come and take an OSHA class in the middle of it when I'm 48 hours, you can pound sand. That's not fair to the guys. And I'll advocate for the guys out there. It is not fair. So I really feel for what's going on in the fire service right now because of the level of work they're giving you guys that doesn't need to be done. Is asinine in my opinion, and that's what I think is why so many people are leaving the fire service. No one leaves because of the fires or the medical. I mean, bro, I've been on a medical as a pain. Like, really, again, I can suck that up, but all these policies and things I've got to do on top of it now, come on, man. That's where the retention, in my opinion, the issue is personally.
All right. If an individual wants to get in contact with you for you to come speak to their department, their organization, how would they go about doing that?
You know what? The best way to do it, I always tell people there's a website called rescuerbook.com and it has information there. My book has my email address on the back. You can go to, I have a website they put together called jasonsautel.com. I never really checked that. Just go to social media and find me. I'm guaranteed you'll find a way to get a hold of me because, I get over 200 emails and messages a day since I wrote my books. My Facebook page blew up to like 700,000 people want to listen to what this stupid guy has to say. So I get tons of messages coming through. But yeah, or anyway, just I try not to put my phone number out there in a general base or email. So I'm not trying to say, go buy my book and my email address is in the bag. But if I throw it out sometimes, dude, I get crushed as it is on emails. But that website, jasonsautel.com, or just go to social media, Facebook pages, you'll find me and hit me up and I'll get back to you.
And my last question for you. It's actually a two-part question. What triggered you to write the book? And did you ever imagine the amount of, I don't want to say success because everybody judges success differently, but
Reach, I
the
think the reach that
yes,
it
the reach or the reciprocation that you have received from it, was that anything you thought would ever happen?
Well, bro, you opened up, and we're not going to go too far here, but why did I write it? First off, after I left fire service, I was telling my stories at men's groups at churches because even churches don't provide what first responders need. We can't sit next to, I'm not saying Bob's wrong, but Bob, who had the roughest thing this week, was he didn't get a house funded for a home loan. That sucks. I'm sorry. But when you have a guy sitting next to Bob, like, yeah, the roughest thing I did this week was did CPR on a baby and it didn't live. My problems aren't bigger. They're just different. And if I tell my story next to Bob, I dropped a nuclear bomb and his story became nothing, even though it's something. So I firefighters will stay quiet at those things because we don't want to tell our stories. But when I'm around you, I don't have to tell my story unless I really feel I want to, because you get it. So that's where it started, was at these things. I started telling my story, started talking about, you know, and it was faith-based, about you know, my joke is how, if you're a person of faith, how I came to Christ in the middle of Sodom and Gomorrah, which is West Oakland. And, just a joke, my friends. But meaning that I was, you know, I just didn't like Christians, but it happened. So that was the story. But my book isn't all just Jesus and faith. I mean, it is not there. It just talks about that's what helped save me. And if that resonates with someone, go for it. So I didn't want to write it. All right, dude, I was like, forget this. But I started writing it. And then one day I told my wife, I'm like, I'm giving back my publisher, because I went the traditional route where they give you a lump of money and all this stuff and contracts and anything. So I'm giving them the money back and I'm done. This just sucks. I'm opening up all these painful memories. I'm opening up these things. I just can't do it anymore. Bro, no joke. Through my Facebook page, which is just Jason Sawtell, if you're there, one of the messages I'm going through, and it's this guy from, well, I'm just gonna say FDM Mike's our big enough department and we're still friends. You know, you know who he is. This dude hits me up and he gives me his phone number. He's like, hey man, I'm going to the firehouse tomorrow morning, but I'm actually not gonna go. I'm gonna kill myself. I'm like, whoa, okay. So I call him and I made it very clear. I said, bro, just want to be clear. Jason, the Oakland fireman, you know, he's like, you're the religious guy. Like, yeah, let's put off that off to the side. I'm just a brother right now. I said, dude, I've been there. I'm not gonna try to take it away from you. But understand this, I'm not going to trace this call. I'm not going to send the cops to go get you. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to ruin your career, because I know in my heart, bro, that you reached out to me, that it's something that you don't want to do. And you know that in your heart. And I'm going to give you my story. And I'm going to share my story and what saved me and what helped me grow from it. And after I hung up with that phone call, told my wife, I said, all right, I need to go forward with this. I need to do this. I need to punch through. It was, you know, that was like, God let me do it. And that's what made me go forward. Now the reach that it has, bro, I don't like to go book numbers or anything, but the way it sold out in Australia and Europe and here in America, and it was a slow burner, if you jokingly, here in America, but now it just goes and goes. The reach has, give you one more story about its success. I'm at FDIC. I look out, dude, and there's all these people wanting me to sign their book. And it's weird. I don't like it, dude. I don't, it's a weird spot to be in. So, but I realize if I don't, I'm not giving them the grace that they want, because they want my signature. If I go, won't do it. It's not fair. So I have to suck it up and do it. All of a sudden there's a guy standing there from a large East Coast fire department. And as I'm signing stuff, I heard his son go, mommy, why is daddy crying? I look over and she's like, oh, cause this man's book really touched your father. Bro. I'm like, I'm not crying. I'm like, allergies out here in Indianapolis are pretty bad. You know? I'm not saying that as a look at me, but I could go book numbers and the reach and how many people, oh, that's a great story. Or we can talk about those instances where it impacted someone personally. And that's what it's about, dude. You know, that's success in my opinion and stuff, is when it gets in the hands of someone who really needed it and it helps them. Bro, I've had people go, it's helped me deal with my PTSD. I've helped people get back to Christ. All these other things there. I have folks from San Francisco Fire Department who I go over and speak to who would never step into a church, which I'm totally cool with that, who asked me to come speak to them because they love that I'm really into my faith. But I'm not there to pour my faith into them. I'm there to pour my love into them by trying to find the help they need to fill these toolboxes up for people struggling. So if someone is a Christian, I want to make sure there's Christian counseling available for them. If they're not a Christian, I want to make sure that's available for them. I want to make sure everyone, if you're part of the LGBT community, I want to make sure that you have a place you feel safe and comfortable. Go, because I want you to get the healing you deserve. But what I always throw in there at the end, bro, that they laugh about, I says, but don't get me wrong. While you're getting your head all fixed, oh, I'm going to be praying for you. And they always laugh because I'm being real. I'm being me, you know, and stuff. So that's why I wrote it. And that's the two-part question on the reach, dude. And it's just been blessed beyond means, dude, just to see how it affects people daily.
Okay. And I actually lied. I have my last question I always ask the guests. So you are not physically in the fire service, but you're still doing work for the fire service. So my question to you is, after the book, I'm not sure the future, what's next? What's the future looking like for you?
It's crazy, dude. I mean, they're in the process of making a movie out of the book. It's gone, Hollywood's all crazy and everything, but we always joke, think about Backdraft and Good Will Hunting mixed together, but with legit fire scenes and stuff. It's kind of what they're doing now. I'm kind of right now focusing in on some of the Christian side there, just because that's who I am and what I am, and writing some stuff to help with those guys. Because I know in the secular side, which I don't like dividing, no church and secular, but I know there's so much psychology and help on that side. But for those of us that get our healing from a different direction, I'm kind of focusing there for now. So with that, new books going on, and being able to go around the United States and just be able to talk into any subject you want me to talk into, I love being able to do that. My schedule's like slammed this year. I travel like 40,000 miles back and forth, going places to speak about stuff that I've experienced, and being able to pour back in the fire service is awesome. Last thing I say about that is being on stage, whatever, dude. I'm just up there so people can hear me. It doesn't put me on a pedestal. What I love is when I get the hell off that stage, I'm in the audience, I'm with my brothers, I get to have the conversation. That's where it's at, dude. That one-on-one, because you can't fix anything nationally. That's proven just what's going on in the United States right now. But when you sit down with someone and individually help them out, bro, that's what I'm doing, and that's what I love doing, and that's what's always going to be next until God calls me to do something else.
Facts. Love it. Love it. Jason, I appreciate you reaching back out. I'm glad we got to make this happen. I loved hearing your story. I love your humility, and I think that's what is one of the key things the world's missing, is that humility, that ability to see somebody else's perspective, to actually listen, not debate. Like, it's okay to have, I don't want to say arguments, it's okay to debate, but at the end of the day, even if you don't see eye to eye, we still have that common goal. Like, you're human, I'm human. You're not of my race, I'm not of your race, but we're still people talking, communicating. I wish, hopefully, we get back to that point in this world, because right now, and it's, I'm on the east, you're on the west, but man, the world is just ridiculous.
You nailed it. I know we said our goodbyes, but I'm just gonna comment on that real quick, dude. The only way that's gonna happen is by getting to know people's stories, getting to know them, listening to them. Bro, I'm never gonna walk in your shoes. I'm never gonna know what it truly feels like to be a black dude here in America. I'm really not. But I need to shut up and listen to your stories. And I don't need to have fences and walls up on listening to your stories. I need to hear what you personally experience. Hear me out. Guess what, dude? I've experienced some race issues because the color of my skin walking into houses. Has it kept me from getting a house? Has it held me down? Has it put my starting line back for? No, it has not. I'm gonna be clear with you. But it freaking sucked. Okay, dude. And if someone immediately says, oh, but Jason, you know what? You're white, so you don't understand. No, bro. I was told not to put into a firehouse one time because I wasn't black. And they thought it was true. But dude, that sucked on so many levels. I'm not claiming racism. I'm just calling on that. That sucked. So you hear that story. And then you didn't experience that. You experienced on a different level, and we hear each other. But here's what I love about what you said. I love the firehouse table of what it used to be. You and I could be in total disagreement on something. And one thing I've always said, I will never agree to disagree with you. Bro, I just disagree with you. I'm disagreeing. And I'll look across the table, and you might be a libtard or conservatard jokingly saying that. That doesn't define you. We're going to. But that's just a subject. That's just it. And the slice of the pie, dude, that's a crumb, okay? I love who you are. I love everything about you. I love your work ethic. Let's go do the dishes. Let's go grab a recliner. Let's watch a movie and tell some funny stories. Let's go out and train and throw some ladders and everything. Put it all aside, dude. I get called so many things that I'm not, dude. Just because, oh, you're in California, so you're an ultra liberal. Oh, you're a Christian, so you're an ultra conservative. Oh, you're the, oh, wait, hold on. You used to run with skinheads. I'm like, shut up, dude. That's just a story, okay, man? Just hear me out. Get to know people. So I love that you throw that out there, that I love. And I don't think we need to agree to disagree. I think we can just disagree, and move on and stuff. Now, if it's total straight up hatred that's going to cause problems, nah, dude, we're going to have an issue there and stuff. We're going to need to fix that and stuff. But if it's these are the feelings I have about that person or the feelings you have about that person, I always say I've never been down with the cancel culture unless someone's truly using platforms to be harmful or something. But that's a whole different story. So I love that you threw that out there, dude. Just love and respect each other, know then that there's idiots out there, and just don't interject with those idiots and stick with the guys who aren't idiots but have different views than you. That's a cool place to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I truly appreciate you coming on, sharing your story, letting others know why you are the way you are. And so, yeah, just thanks. Thanks for coming on. Like, I
Thanks for having me,
appreciate
bro.
it.
Love your podcast, man. I'm on my fifth show now, and I'm getting hooked and stuff. So definitely be advocating for the
I
show. I love it.
appreciate you, pal. Thank you.
All right, have a good day.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.